Today's episode is brought to you by Monster. Find employees who work as hard as you at monster.com/hiring. Monster. Find better.
International markets and overseas news. What do you need to know when it comes to your money?
From Wall Street to Main Street to your street, this is Your Money Matters from the Wall Street Journal. Money news that helps your bottom line.
I'm John Wardock, and this is Your Money Matters from the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for making us one of the top investing podcasts on iTunes. Go ahead, tell a friend about us. We hear lots of news about overseas activities, and they tend to rattle Wall Street, whether it's China or Europe or Japan. So we have decided to ask Paul Christopher to join us. He is the head global market strategist at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute. Paul, thanks for joining us. And first thing, right out of the gate, European Central Bank saying that it's leaving the door open for further interest rate cuts. What do you make of that news?
Well, thank you, John. The European Central Bank is on hold right now, we think, and probably as well the Fed also on hold, both of them recognizing that really their means of stimulating the economy can still work, but that there are some very strong headwinds out there right now, especially in the form of volatile commodity prices and slow growth, even slowing growth in emerging markets. So as long as those headwinds remain so strong, central banks will probably keep their heads down a little bit more and just talk their economies higher.
What do you make of the European economy right now? What are you watching there?
Well, we're watching a very impressive recovery in consumer spending, auto sales, retail sales. All of those things are looking good, but we continue to see the business sector struggle with equipment and structures. There's really just not a lot of incentive to build out factories since China and other countries in the emerging space are really just not buying at the same pace that they were before. So it's a moderate recovery. It's sustainable. We think it's solid. You can jump up and down on it, but it's just not going to be very fast.
For the ECB, no rate change. So if I am a U.S. investor, what should I make of the news? Should I think about it, or should I just, that's more headlines coming out of Europe?
Well, the European Central Bank is important to watch, and certainly they maintain an open-mindedness to being stimulative if it's needed. But they're recognizing, I think, again, that they really can't fight all of these headwinds by themselves. So it's going to remain a slow growth environment, and you should take this as a signal to maintain your positions, but not to really be thinking about getting more aggressive at this point.
The other day, China posted economic growth news that was pretty much in line with expectations. What do you see happening with China, and what do we really need to know?
Well, what Americans really need to know about China is that their economy is not like ours. When Americans see news about the Chinese manufacturing sector shrinking, that's deliberate. It's by design. The Chinese manufacturing sector is large, it's inefficient, and it's a terrible polluter. So the Chinese government has decided to work that sector into a smaller sector, export less, and focus more on the consumer side of their economy. Their consumer sectors are doing quite well, and they need to improve their agriculture, their financial system, and their other services like healthcare. And so that's going to be the focus for China going forward. Even as China contracts the manufacturing sector, the consumer and services side is growing at double digits. So it's hard to imagine an economy that could be contracting so hard in one major area, but still growing fast enough in another to keep the economy stable. But that's where China is right now, and we need them to stay there.
How much longer is China going to be a growth story, do you think?
Oh, I think for quite a long time to come, but they're in transition right now. It's sort of like putting the car up on the rack for a while. You have to tune it up. You have to take care of it. You have to pull it back down, and then it's suitable to drive again. China's going to continue to grow, but what we have to remember is that those investment opportunities will be less going forward in the way of manufacturing, construction, and commodities processing. It'll be quite a bit more in the area of U.S. and other Western firms going over to help them, show them how to do healthcare better, how to do financial, insurance, banking, and investments better, and how especially to make their agricultural sector more efficient. And all those, we think, will prove to be very valuable earnings opportunities and growth opportunities for investors in the future.
India, you just spent some time in India. On this podcast, we don't talk about India very often. because there's so much other news going on, whether it's Europe or China or even Japan making noise. What can you tell us about India?
Yeah, for a lot of U.S. investors, India as a particular investment destination is not really all that attractive. The bond market is difficult to get into. The stock market is kind of limited. But to India as a test case or as an example case of what's wrong or what's right with the rest of emerging markets is very interesting to consider. They have a very large population and one that has enormous potential for consumption growth in the future. We think that's where the opportunity will lie, along with foreign direct investment in IT, in information technology, so computerized services that Indians do very, very well. Those will be opportunities, but at the moment, those opportunities in India and around emerging markets look a little bit held back to us, held back by problems in the steel and cement and textile sectors where they're not able to produce efficiently. They're not able to increase their exports, and they've borrowed a lot of money from their local banks, and those loans, bad loans in some cases, have to be dealt with. We think that's going to take another 6 to 12 months, and during that time, those problems and the corrections will hold back the Indian market and hold back emerging markets more generally.
If I'm an everyday investor, should I even give some thought to investing in India? And how would I go about doing that? Just through mutual funds, or should I look out for specific stocks that trade?
It's probably going to be difficult to find individual stocks. And what's more, the U.S. investor probably needs to stay diversified anyway. It's probably better to look for a fund that will take a broad array of Indian investment and maybe even emerging market positions that would include India, of course, but be even more broadly diversified. That's how we would advise the U.S. investor to get into emerging markets. And yes, if you have no exposure right now, it might be a good time to start looking around because when these prices stop falling, they could rise quickly. That's the history of emerging markets. And so we wouldn't want investors to miss the opportunity to get in while prices are attractive. We would just probably hold off for a little while longer here while the bad loan problem works itself through around India and emerging markets more generally.
And what are you going to be watching over the next 3 or 4 months?
Well, 3 or 4 months from now, we're watching to see whether the pace of bad loans being written off at banks in emerging markets, whether that is going to increase, stay the same, or decrease. There was a considerable amount of loan volume written off in the fourth quarter of last year. We think there will be another large volume in the first quarter. But once that volume begins to peak and then starts to move lower, that would be an indication that the problem is starting to become managed and in hand. And after that, it's just a question of possibly a few more months before we might start to see the markets get interested in emerging markets once again.
Let me ask you one more question here, tying what's going on domestically in the United States with overseas. We have a presidential campaign going on, and we have all this talk about building walls and bringing jobs back to the U.S. When you travel overseas, what are people asking you about when it comes to the presidential campaign?
Well, what they want to know is whether or not the new U.S. president, whoever that might be, will still be open to trade with the rest of the world. You see, the rest of the world doesn't perceive the benefit of trade as being simply export-driven. They want to know that they'll be able to buy goods and services from everyone and that they'll be able to sell goods and services to everyone. So the main worry is that the U.S., as the leading country in the world, may start to erect barriers to trade that would then induce other governments to do the same. And before long, we might have a situation where there's so many barriers to trade that global growth and global investment prospects become diminished.
Is there a concern that we could have trade walls start popping up between the U.S. and all these other countries we've discussed?
Yes, and the people I speak to overseas in the various countries, they are alarmed when they hear presidential candidates start to talk in terms of turning away from new trade arrangements or new trade agreements just to protect American jobs. That's an important goal for America, of course, to generate jobs. But to do so on the back of trade restrictions is a risk. It poses a risk that's perhaps not being discussed in the presidential debate, in the debates, insofar as those trade restrictions may encourage wider global restrictions that would be bad for U.S. investors and investors around the world.
He's Paul Christopher, the head global market strategist at Wells Fargo Investment Institute, joining us to offer some global insights. Paul, thank you very